the fiddle every evening, fit to kill, all hair in place, tie just straight. Everything was just perfect. So this young psychiatrist thought, I think maybe I have something to learn. So he said to the older psychiatrist, he said, tell me, he said, what is your secret that you get through the day so fresh and so invigorated? And the older said to the younger, well, it's easy. He said, I never listen. Isn't that true? Listening sometimes is difficult. In order to get in and feel and experience the emotions of what a person is telling you, it's not always so easy to do. Last summer, I started a new little hobby of gardening. We thought we'd do it as a family. And it has been a learning experience for me, in particularly. This summer had especially two lessons that my gardening experience taught me. When it was about time for the gardens to go in, and I went out there with all this vigor and dug up the land. We live on kind of a little acre of land, and in the back someone has had a garden in the years as they've gone by. So I went by and I was digging up this plot of ground and getting it ready to go, and then my wife said, well, honey, you know, if we get it all planted, the rabbits are going to come just like they did last year. So could you get a fence? Oh, dear. Now, do I have to get a fence? I mean, that's a lot of work. Because there was already a rusty fence all the way around it, and it had to be all taken up, and then the post put in again, and new fence put up. But at her bidding, I said, I will do it. So I went and got this big 100-foot of fence, 150-foot, and started putting it around, and my wife diligently was writing on little popsicle sticks all the names of what we were going to plant. Those are the kind of things I usually skip. The last year I just planted it. Whatever grew, I couldn't remember what was what. But, you know, my better half had that all written down. And then she taped them so when it rained, they wouldn't disappear. So she stuck these all in the ground, and my job was head waterer. I really enjoy that. I really did. Now, but I didn't do it the way a lot of people do. I didn't go out and turn a faucet, you know, and it automatically sprayed. It was all by hand. Darling custom hand-grown gardens. That's what mine are like. And so I'd go out there every day, you know, but the problem is we had a few holes in the hose, so I lose pressure, so I had to push it and, you know how you do? You throw the water so it gets to the far corner? And my wife, honey, the little watermelon over the corner, you're not getting it. You know, you've got to throw the water a little farther. So she'd go out and wrap duct tape around the hose, you know, to get it to work. So little by little, this garden began to grow, and I guess that for me is one of the neatest things about gardening, is to see something grow. You know, to watch it there, watch them poke out of the ground, then they get bigger. So every morning and every night, I would water the garden about 10 minutes. 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes at night, 10 or 15 minutes. Stand there, so peaceful, watering that garden, watching it grow. Well, as the summer went on, the number one thing I was looking forward to was the corn. I really like corn. Now, I'm from Iowa primarily, and there's nothing that beats Iowa corn. You know, I'm just sorry about that. But Iowa sweet corn is just fantastic. And I had tried some from one of these little stops last summer, and we threw 15 of them away after eating 3 of them because they were just bad. And someone told me later that someone was trying to sell me field corn in place of sweet corn. Maybe that's what happened. But anyway, I was really looking forward to this corn. So I'd be out there watering it every day, and it was growing, and it was growing. And in my infinite wisdom, I thought to myself, when I was in high school, the corn was about this tall, and junior high, for a part-time job in the summer, I detasseled corn. And one of the things you do, you know, it keeps your thumbs down, and you go and you pull out that tassel. Pull out that tassel. That's about the extent of my farming experience. And so I thought to myself, you know, that only makes sense because all the juices go up to the top, and who needs the top? You know, well, I want the corn right here to grow in. And that way more water and juice will go to the corn. See? So I'm very logical. So I systematically went through my little corn row and pulled all the tassels. Pulled all these tassels. They're all laying on the ground. My wife went back and said, honey, what happened to the corn? I said, oh, I detasseled it. It's going to grow a lot better. Really is. I know that. You know? Someone told me, you know, if you same with your tomatoes and you take out those dead branches, that's just dead stuff. So I'd go out and water it, and it had the little cobs on it, and I'd peel them back, and they were kind of white, you know, real small. So I'd water it, you know, whistle and just wait for that corn to get ready and the sun would shine. And of course, you know, we had that big drought this summer. Well, about 3 weeks later, nothing seemed to be happening to my corn. So I called a friend who is a farmer. Friend. And I said, "Say, I have a question. Boy, my corn just isn't producing. You know, and I was wondering if you could tell me what the problem is." So I proceeded to tell them what I'd done. They proceeded to laugh and told me, "Well, Mark, the facts of life are that the tassel is the male part of the corn and the silk is the female part. And unless the male part sprinkles in the wind onto the female part, your corn's never going to grow. You effectively degendered your corn." Oh, wonderful. And I was sincere. You know, I was sincere as could be. Genuine. And I'd ruined my crop. That was hard to take. It was really hard to go out and water the garden after that, I want to tell you. High standard of tomatoes. We'd already picked the beans. And I don't like squash. I'm not too fond of cucumbers, but I can eat them. And all that was left was pumpkins and corn and tomatoes. So I pointed it all on the tomatoes and said, "I'm going to let the corn die. That's the way it's going to be. It can just die, you know." So anyway, this was way back in the summer. I began thinking about this series. And I began to think, you know, love is really like a garden. The garden of our relationships. I thought, you know, there's two really valuable things I learned from this experience to apply to love. One is that one of the amazing things about plants is that whatever you plant, it grows. I mean, it grows what it's supposed to grow. If you plant a tomato, it didn't come up pumpkins. And if you plant cucumbers, they don't come up zucchini. And if you plant beans, they don't come up tomatoes, right? Right. That happens. Second thing is that no matter how sincere I was and how genuine I was and how well-meaning I was with my corn, my ignorance and my folly had ruined my crop. You know, love is that way. Love is like a garden, and if we're going to make it grow, and if we're going to make our relationships last, and if we're going to make them meaningful, and if we're going to make them ones that have permanence the way it can be, then we're going to have to learn to be skilled gardeners in our gardener relationships. Probably the number one counsel that's given by counselors to young people who are getting married, or the number one thing I hear, is you got to learn to communicate. Hey, you hear that? You got to learn to communicate. You got to learn. And the number one complaint after people have been married for a while is, "We don't communicate. We don't communicate. He doesn't listen to me. She doesn't listen to me. He doesn't understand me. You don't understand me." And it goes back and forth and back and forth. The number one reason, one of the number one reasons people leave their jobs and go on to another job, did you know it's not money? The primary reason is because they don't feel they were listened to. They don't feel they mattered. They don't feel anyone heard them. Everyone wants to be heard. And probably the greatest need we have today in relationships is to learn to listen. I was reading a book recently about a large city, and there was an article in the small classified ads that said, "Listening service. For $25, a person will come to your home and listen to your problems. They won't talk to you. They won't give you any advice. They're not a trained professional. They're not a counselor. All they will do is listen." People called up and used the service. Why? Because people aren't listened to today. I'm convinced personally that you'll never learn to be able to speak effectively if you don't know how to listen effectively. And when I say speak effectively, I mean be able to speak to the need of the individual, not speak the English language. There's a lot of you who talk really wonderful, but it goes right over your head, you know, it just misses you. A lot of people who have wonderful vocabulary, it just misses you. People who can speak to your heart are people who know and are learning and have trained themselves to listen. Well, this hasn't always been an easy thing for me, and I'm not going to give you the impression that I'm just the world's greatest listener, because I'm not, and I have a long ways to go. But I've had to learn some difficult lessons in this. And probably the first was right after getting married, as Brent was alluding to earlier in the scripture reading, that when I got married, something changed. I don't know, I'm sure all of you in this room can relate to this. Something changed. I mean, we used to just sit for hours and talk. I'd listen and, oh, he understands me, and oh, she understands me, and she's such a good listener. During those courting days, those dating days, and then we got married, and life begins, and I'm off to work, and she was off to work, and then children come along, and life just tends to fly by, and oh, and there's little things that happen that grate on one another, and they're not so easy to express yourself anymore, and before you know it, what you're sowing in your relationship is insensitivity, sarcasm, harshness, unkindness, a little malice, impatience. What we don't realize is just like the garden, the seeds you plant are the seeds that grow. And so these get planted in your relationship and they begin to grow. They begin to grow. Listening is probably the greatest way that one of the greatest ways, I believe, that you can communicate to an individual that you care and that they matter to you. I think it's one of the desperate needs that we have today in this country, in family life, in the corporate world, in a relationship with our children, a relationship with our mates, and a relationship with people that we love, is the willingness and the ability to learn to listen. If you remember last week, we talked about the definition of love. We talked about the secular definition. We talked about the biblical definition in 1 Corinthians that love is patient and love is kind and love is not rude and love isn't jealous and love isn't self-seeking and love doesn't keep track of record of wrongs and doesn't rejoice in evil, it rejoices with the truth, always believes, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. All those things can apply to listening. All those things can apply to listening. And I would like to just cover with you a few of what I call gardening secrets or listening secrets. That I think, as I've looked back in my last 10 years, things that have really helped me in my relationship with not only my family, but my relationship with many of you and people that I meet every day. My profession demands that I know how to listen and that I excel in it. That I keep pushing forward in it. My marriage depends on my ability to listen. And parenting depends on my ability to listen. So I'd like to just cover with you 8 little tidbits that I think will really help you become an effective listener. If you look at James 1:19, I'll just read this verse to you. Brent read this morning. It says, "My dear brothers, take note of this. Everyone should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to become angry." Well, I read this for a long time, you know, for years. And I read it like this. Everyone should be quick to speak, quick to get angry, and slow to listen. I for years, just couldn't get this little principle through my head. You know? Slow to speak. Instead, Mark, be quick to listen. Be quick to listen. I'll give you some examples as we go through here. The first listening secret is time. Listening takes your time. And if you're not willing to give of your time, then you'll never be a good listener. You'll never be a good listener. Time is probably, giving of your time, the greatest way to communicate with someone that you matter to me. You matter to me. And if you've been in a relationship, whether it's marriage or dating relationship or with your children or any personal close relationship, particularly marriage, you begin to fathom how easy it is to go for weeks without communicating. Now I'm talking real communication here. And I'm not talking, how's the weather? How was your day? One of the things I like to do, people will call me on the phone. I had this happen a week ago. Someone called me on the phone and I said, "Hello," and this is Mark speaking. They said, "Hello," and I said, "Oh, well, how are you?" I said, "Oh, fair." And I stopped right there. I said, "Well, what's the matter?" Because this person's never fair. I know them. So what's going on? I ended up in an hour conversation with that individual. The individual telling me what was going on in their life and things that were happening. And then my comment was not even hardly related to what they were talking about, but what was the real need of the heart. And when we got done, I said, "I am so glad you asked me that. I'm so glad we talked. I had a conversation a couple weeks ago. An individual was over visiting a young woman. And we were talking, and she paused after she was done talking, and I commented on what I could perceive was really her heart was saying, not her mouth, but her heart. And she began to cry, and she said, "How did you know that that's really what's going on with me?" It takes time to listen. It's probably the ultimate sacrifice, I believe, of love is your time, your commitment, your willingness to sit down. And that brings me to my second point, availability. You must be available. If you want to make sure and make your love relationships last, you must make sure that those individuals know in your life that I'm available. I am available. I can't tell how many times I have stopped the lawnmower. I don't have one of the kind that keeps running. And it doesn't, you know, you don't have any more because the bar, it lets go. Once you let go of it with your hands. And so mine doesn't always start up. And I'll get phone calls or something. And very, very often will I come in from out in the yard, come in, sit down, hot, sweaty, on the phone. Or with my children, or with my family. It is so important that in order to develop listening skill, that you're available. And if you're not available, it'll begin to come obvious to that person. And little by little, they won't come to you anymore. They'll give up. They won't come. See, marriage can work. It's just a matter of keeping the weeds down and making sure that you give it the water of a listening ear and available time. Relationships can work. Parenting can work. The third thing is attentiveness. I think it's very important that when you're speaking to someone or when they're speaking to you, you look them in the eye. My mother used to tell me that when I was real little, 2 years old, I'd be talking to her and my mother. Of course, there was six children in my family, and I'm the oldest. And at one time, there was like four in diapers all at once. And then there was me. And I'd want to talk to my mom. And you know how it is, you want to talk to mom. You want her attention. And I would actually grab her cheeks and move her head. Just like that. Say, "Mom, look at me, Mommy." And she'd look for a minute, and then she'd tell me this, you know. Nothing helps more when someone is communicating with you than you give them your attention. Now, we all know what this is like, don't we, men? Monday night comes. And, I mean, you never get Monday nights back, man. And that football game is not going to be played over again. Face it. You know? The Jets and the Bills, I mean, it's the biggest thing happening this week. And I'm sorry, honey, if you want to talk, but just pick another time. Because this is an event. This is history making right here. And I have $30 riding on this game. And there's the lottery at work. So, you know, let's talk about the problems tomorrow. Tomorrow never comes. And what you've just communicated, and I've got to tell you, I've been guilty of this. I've been guilty of this, and I'm learning. I'm learning to get up, if that situation happens, or with my children, to walk up and totally turn the TV off. What really is hard for me is the fights. Boxing. I love boxing. And you know how bad I am with boxing? I don't want to tell you. When we were expecting our first daughter, Celeste, we were cooking in a sorority at the time, my wife and I, in Iowa. And the Olympics were on, see, at that time. And either Olympics or reruns, I can't remember which, but the fights were on. And my wife was expecting, and it was her due date. And dinner had to be gotten ready. And at the same time I was expecting, at the same time, I was truly enraptured in these fights. So between the chicken upstairs and my wife in labor on the couch, I'm watching the fights. Okay? Now I'm going to tell you how far I've come. All right? But I want to be honest with you. Okay? And I'm sitting there, and the fights, and I get up and move with the fights, you know. And I'm talking to the guy on the screen. You know, it's the way my dad was a fighter, and this is what we'd do every Saturday afternoon with the fights. You know, as he'd be up beside me, and you know, I'd do this, and I'd do that, and I'd faint, and I would jab and miss his head, so he'd go to the left, and he'd hit him with the right. And so I'd be, you know, I'm talking to these guys. And Kathy's going, "Honey, oh, this hurts. Mark, I think it's time." "Oh, honey, just hold on. How do you know? This is the first one. Maybe they're those Braxton Hicks contractions or something. You know, this is the first one." So, and besides supper, I got to get supper done. And I'm done watching the fight. So finally, I go upstairs and I took the TV up there too because, you know, I wanted to give her some peace and quiet. I was trying to think of her. And besides, I needed to get the food done. So I'm up there and finally, I hear this, "Mark." And Kathy's at the foot of the steps. She can't climb up. He says, "Mark, it's time." And I said, "You sure?" He said, I'm sure they're 3 minutes apart. Okay. So I turn the TV off, and away I go from the fights. Now, I'm telling you the way it really is, all right? I like to tell it the way it is. That's the way it was. And that's bad. I'll admit that. That's bad. If I had continued the last 9 years of my marriage that way, I would not be married today. I would not be. No way. That was so insensitive. I mean, she was really, really in pain. And I'm caught up in what I'm doing. But did you know that to that same degree, many of us live life that way? Your little son or daughter, they grew up to be teenagers and you wondered, why did I lose them? What happened? You know what happened? Every time little Johnny, little Sally had something they wanted to say, it was, that's really good, son. That's great. Yeah. Well, hey, listen, I don't have time. I've got to get this done for the job tomorrow. And it goes on and on and on like that. Did you know the average father spends 30 seconds per day with all of his children? 30 seconds a day? And we wonder, well, why didn't the garden work? What would have happened if I would have spent 1 minute a day watering my garden this summer? Anybody have any clue? We had a drought, remember? The worst drought we've ever had in this state. It would have died. We are living in a drought of love today in relationships. A drought, a desperate drought. And young children and men and women are looking for somebody who will care, who will take the time to care. And if you care, if you take the time to listen, it will go a long ways. Your attentiveness, your looking them in the eye and giving them the opportunity without being disinterested is very, very important. Want to know a little secret when you're listening to someone? Don't ever look at your watch. Don't ever look at your watch. I have had that happen. Maybe I'm talking with my wife or something. And my wife's a very productive woman. She really is very productive and very disciplined. And all these things that she's doing all the time. Sometimes I grab her by the shoulder and say, honey, sit. I'd like to talk to you. And she pops back up and starts taking care of one of the children or something that's going on. And we've worked on that in our relationship through the time because I just hate that, you know, when I'm trying to express something. And what happens is you're really starting to get to click. You get to something really personal and the person glances off and you lose them just like that. The emotion's gone. There's just been a communication. Well, listen, I'm a little bored. You're boring me with your story. And you're losing it. Now, nobody's perfect. It's going to take time to grow in this. But that's very important. Fourth thing, let them talk fully before you offer advice or counsel. Have you ever noticed sometimes with young children, they stutter? Not a bad stutter, severe, but stutter. You know, want to know one of the major reasons why they stutter? Because mom and dad never let them finish their sentence. Oh, I have seen that so much. But mommy, can I? And mom and dad always cut in on them. Mom and dad always cut in. Mom and dad always finish their thought for them before they get to finish it. And you've got a kid that he knows if I don't get this out in 5 seconds, I don't get any more time. And so they try really, really hard. Really, it's really heartbreaking to see that. Really, really hard, and it doesn't get out. And they get cut off. And we wonder why they turn to drugs and why they turn to alcohol and why they turn to their peers. You know why? Because peers listen. I was watching Ted Koppel the other night. And he was doing a special on gangs in Chicago and gangs in Los Angeles. And one of the guys said, do you know one of the things we have to deal with now with the gangs? If the intimidation wasn't enough, the other day I had an 8-year-old boy in my office who's involved in one of these gangs in Los Angeles County already this year. In the first 5 months, there was 220 deaths of young boys and girls. And he said, this young boy told me, he said, well, he said, why in the gang? He said, well, my mother died when I was 8. And on the anniversary of her funeral, I went out to put flowers on the grave and the gang showed up, sat on the grave, cried with me, got high with me, and brought flowers themselves. You better beat them to the punch. That's all you have to do. All you have to do is be the one who listens first. Be the one who cares. Be the one who's there. It's so, so important. Fifth, give them freedom of expression to make a mistake. Don't keep correcting. I've seen that. I've had that. I've done that. A little child will say a word wrong. They're really trying to tell you a story. Now, no, honey, it's not teached. It's taught. No, honey, it's not this, it's that. And we can do that with adults. We can do that with our mate. Maybe they're trying to relay a story. And I've seen this happen in public when someone else, you know, you've got a couple over, and the wife or the husband's always correcting the mate. It's just selfishness. Just let it go. Let it go. It's a great way to express your love. The sixth thing is learn to share the feelings of the other person. Learn to share their feelings. Learn to be intent on what they're saying and share their emotion. If that child comes home with something exciting, get excited about it. If they come home with something sorrowful, then get sorrowful about it. But the way to be a successful listener is to put yourself in their shoes like it was happening to you. You know, sometimes this is a hard thing for me because I think I got my mother's emotions. And I was reading a Reader's Digest article yesterday, in fact, about a little boy and a mother. And the little boy was a hemophiliac, contracted AIDS. And I read the story, but I cried about 15 minutes through the whole rest of the story. It so moved me. You know, I thought of my own son, my own 7-8-year-old son. What would happen if someone told me he's going to die? Boy, I'll tell you that. But I'm not afraid of that. I've worked really hard to try and put myself in the place of other people. I think probably the greatest example of this is Jesus. I learned so much from Jesus. Jesus always had time for people. If it was late at night when Nicodemus came to Jesus, Jesus talked. If it was when he was eating a meal, it says so many people came to him he couldn't even eat. He listened. Whatever he was doing, wherever he was, he listened. And he listened. And he listened. And he listened. And he gave him time. And he empathized. 7, give feedback that reflects your thoughtful attention to what was being said. Give feedback. Part of what I mean by feedback is, usually I've never had anyone share anything with me that I couldn't actually share a very similar story in my own life that let them know, I listened, I understand, and I know just how you feel. People need that. Number 8, remember to listen to the heart. The Bible tells us that out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. But often it's not the words that are being said, it's the feelings, the emotions that are being expressed. And referring back to what I shared with you earlier, so many times I've been in a situation counseling with someone or with my children, and they're sharing a little story with me or sharing something that happened. What's really important is you understand what the heart's saying, that you feel to the heart, and that then you speak to the heart. Not to the mouth, but speak to the heart. If you can learn to listen, if you learn to be a great listener, I guarantee you, your relationships will last. And last, and last, and last. Let's pray. Lord.